Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Our topic tonight, ADHD and emotional self-regulation, fight, flight, or freeze. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. David Now, one of my absolute favorite persons to interview. Particularly on this particular topic, I think you're really going to kind of enjoy the show. Real quickly, tonight is Wednesday, October the 12th, year 2016, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is our second broadcast in ADHD Awareness Month in 2016. And again, we've got a spectacular show. In fact, I actually did this interview with Dr. Now, I think it was back in June, and it was so good, I had to save it for a special occasion, which is tonight. In addition, this is a show that I've wanted to do since I interviewed Dr. Russell Barkley back in March of 2012 with regard to emotions and ADHD and self-regulation. Real quickly, 1 month from now, more or less, is the 2016 International CHAD Conference in Costa Mesa, California. It's a spectacular experience. If you're on the fence, you need to go. That's all I have to say. There's nothing like it. Being with your tribe, there's a lot of great speakers. Many of them we actually have on our show. And while we like to bring you really good contact, there's nothing like standing face-to-face and asking questions and mingling in the hall. So I know you got to drop a little bit of coin to go do that, but I'm telling you, it's actually spectacular. You need to check it out. And to register, you can go to chadd.org. Real quickly, Dr. Russell Barkley always encourages me to promote ADHDfund.com, which is a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small-scale research on ADHD worldwide. Again, we value our relationship with CHAD. Tonight's show is actually being brought to you by CHAD. We have a real quick tip, and then we'll get into the meat of the show.
ADHD challenges continue into adulthood for 35 to 65% of children with ADHD. Finding strengths, building resilience, and learning to self-advocate will improve your child's chances of succeeding in college, vocational school, or the workforce. Learn how to prepare your child for life beyond high school at CHAD's annual conference on ADHD in Costa Mesa, California this November. More information at chad.org, chadd.org.
All right, everybody, let's get into the meat of the show. Real quickly, this was inspired by an interview I did by Dr. Barkley years ago, talking about ADHD as a self-regulation issue and how he really believes that emotions is as much a part of ADHD as attention is. And after that that interview and subsequent coaching, I couldn't agree with him more. We've done interviews with Autumn Zitani at Sesame Street, Melissa Orlov, who's a marriage consultant on ADHD. It's been fascinating, the biology side of emotional regulation. And this show is really focused in on that side of it and the need for the individual to use the executive functioning brain to override it. If it was easy, we wouldn't be talking about it. But hopefully this will give you insight. So again, let's roll the tape, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Dr. David Now earned his doctorate at the University of Alabama and completed his internship program in neuropsychology at Tulane University Medical Center. He's been in private practice since 1999. He's an inspiring teacher and an international speaker and provides programs, workshops, retreats to help solve real-life problems for those impacted by ADHD. He's a member of the American Psychological Association, Massachusetts Neuropsychological Association, the International Neuropsychological Association, Society, the American Academy of Clinical Neuropsychologists Neuropsychology. Sorry, everybody, I'm kind of struggling here. ADHD Coaches Organization and the American Professional Society of ADHD and Related Disorders. You can find more information about Dr. David Now online at his website at drnowell.com. With that, Dr. Now, welcome to the show.
Welcome. It's good to be here. You've done these shows a lot, but it sounds like you're having a fight or flight reaction.
I am, because it's early in the morning. We're pre-recording this, and I'm a little stressed because of some other things going on. So I am a little emotional right now. It's getting the best of me, but I know that I'm going to pause here, and I'm going to like take a couple deep breaths and calm down and bring it back online. How's that?
So how do you do that when you notice that you're getting too much of that? You said you're going to pause and take a couple of breaths. Specifically,
well, you know,
what do you do?
This is interesting because this is actually – I've heard this before, you know, growing up is like, you know, just pause and take a deep breath. But I didn't really understand it till I became an attention coach and started interviewing other people. And I remember interviewing Autumn Zitani from Sesame Street. They had done, I guess it was season 43, I think it was. They did a whole series for preschoolers on self-regulation. And that, I think what I've learned ubiquitously is that one of the best ways to notice when you're getting emotional or you're going into like a fight, flight, or freeze response is really kind of your body. If you listen to your body, it will tell you if you learn to listen to it. And when you feel that sensation, Melissa Orlov talks about flooding, Elaine Taylor Kloss, like your amygdala is getting hijacked or something like that, is you pause. Yep. And you do something. Now, some people breathe and count 1, 2, 3. I found that for some that I coach with ADHD, they splash cold water on their head or they doodle or whatever, because you distance yourself from that emotional trigger to down-regulate your emotions. Because often, I think that from what I've learned, that your emotions actually hijack your prefrontal cortex, so that when you are in that fight, flight, or free mode, you can't remember what you would normally remember to do. And so the more you distance yourself and you downregulate your emotions, you can bring your executive functioning brain online and be able to think kind of rationally. So what's interesting to me, and I'm very interested in your comments, which is why I wanted to bring you on the show, is I've heard lots of people talk about this. They use different words, but that process seems to be the same. As you feel it, and it's like you witness your brain in its own habitat, and then you kind of beat it at its own brain by overriding it, by distancing itself. So that's just my kind of summation. I had you on the show because I'm very interested in what your thoughts on it. But for me, you feel it. You have to pause. It's very mindful. Notice it. And then you do the thing to distance yourself from it so you can calm down and think.
Yes. So, and that when you say do the thing, give me an example of something that you do, something you can practice, you can trigger when you need it. When you get mindful, then what do you do?
Well, for me, I can feel it. And then what I do is I begin to like try to focus in on like thinking about how my brain – it's an automated response. In other words, it's kind of like I divest, kind of step back and almost watch myself and notice and say, those feelings that I'm having is automated based on centuries of evolution. And I kind of like watch it happen and almost like say, okay, I see that's happening. I know it's happening. And I try not to dwell on the thoughts, but watch my thoughts and say, this will pass. Now that's for me. But I talk about this stuff all the time. And a little bit more witness it. But I find if I just kind of say, oh, there my brain goes again, it's into that instinctive mode and just kind of let it run its course, then I can get back online. That's what works for me. Exercise really works for me when I'm really hyped up. But day in and day out, just kind of watching it and saying, that's not my heart, that's not my soul, that's the biology and that pre-programmed response.
You're reminding me of a quote from Jon Kabat-Zinn, a psychologist who actually used to be right here at the med school in Worcester, Massachusetts. He's now gone on to someplace warmer. I forget where he went. But he's known for sort of really bringing mindfulness to medicine and to clinical psychology, just sort of taking it outside of its context of a spiritual practice and then demonstrating how it also has a place in just day-to-day life, and including clinical practice. And that is, the quote is, you can't fight the waves, but you can learn how to surf.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so that process you're describing, beginning to notice it, and then implementing some strategy that you've already practiced and learned when you're calm, you know, is surfing. If you can, if everybody can imagine that you're waving at a friend across the street, hold your hand up, you're waving. Now, bring your fingers together and bring your thumb into the middle of your palm. And then look at your thumb. Think of your thumb as the amygdala. Each hemisphere of your brain has an amygdala. It's about the size and shape of an almond, and it's ancient, and we owe a lot to the amygdala. The amygdala helps us scan our environment, quickly noticing safe, dangerous, relevant, irrelevant. Now, the amygdala serves us well. But when the amygdala is hijacked, or when there is some disorder with the amygdala begins to fire, you know, telling us that there are threats in the environment, or making us notice things. For example, like, look how many times 2 3s show up. Look how many times 2 Bs show up, and I need to blink my eyes 6 times to prevent something bad from happening. So, in other words, obsessive and compulsive features can have their roots in amygdala functioning. PTSD actually changes well, trauma changes the structure of, among other brain structures, the amygdala. And so the amygdala is involved in trauma-related anxiety disorder, rage reaction. So you might think of the amygdala as a bit of a caveman. It's fight or flight, it's fear, it's danger. Now, bring your fingers around that thumb. It's like you're making a fist, but the thumb is in the middle of this. So imagine your fingers are the prefrontal cortex. That's newer tissue that we share in common with other higher mammals. About 7% of a dog's brain is prefrontal cortex, but 25% of our brain is prefrontal cortex. And we use our thinking brain, our planning brain, to manage the amygdala. Now, in a best-case scenario, you could work with me for 5 or 10 years and not even know I had an amygdala. I would just look so calm and cool. But the truth is, I was a little bit nervous about our interview today as well. I mean, I was looking forward to it, and we've been emailing about it for months. But, you know, whenever you do something like this, you want to do a good job, and you're just a little bit nervous. And so what I'm doing right now is I'm standing up. I felt like I'm nervous enough that I want to stand up. But if I were a little more nervous, I would actually not perform as well. If I didn't care at all, if I weren't nervous at all, I might not have even remembered to call in today or to prepare for this conversation. So a little bit of scanning your environment is good. It makes you buy insurance and lock your front door and, you know, check your messages. So there's nothing wrong with scanning, nothing wrong with anxiety. It's when it's too much that it's uncomfortable or it gets in the way. So this prefrontal cortex folded over your thumb there, those are the strategies that you and I are talking about, the strategies that we can learn in advance and then fire off when we feel the amygdala beginning to get hijacked.
I love this finger metaphor that you have, because I mean, it kind of looks like a weird kind of brain on the top, just the way it is, and it really kind of makes a lot of sense, because it, you know, developed, because to me, correct me if I'm wrong, like every animal has this fight, flight, or freeze response, because if not, we'd all be dead or we wouldn't really survive. So it's kind of vital if there's a threat to kind of go into a program mode. Yet humans, with these fingers wrapped around with the prefrontal cortex, we have the ability, if we notice it, actually to override that automatic response of the amygdala, which is kind of what we're talking about here, is learning those strategies in order to override it so that you don't just get hijacked and go off into something and in a way that doesn't make some sense. Now, did I misrepresent it? Does that make sense to you?
That's exactly right. And to be hijacked, you know, what would that look like if their amygdala is hijacked? I think people know, but let's go ahead and describe it.
Well, I can tell you what, let's go to break real quick, and we come back. Yeah. Let's kind of spend some time really on that. So everybody, we're going to go to break. You need to learn more about Dr. David now. He's brilliant. He's one of my favorite guests to interview. He's very articulate. He doesn't talk at a real high level. He gets really into the details, and you can learn all about him. When he's in town, he does a lot of speaking. I very much encourage you to go check out his presentations. They're awesome. And if you're listening to this and you need to hire somebody to come and do a presentation, he's your guy. To learn more, go to drnowell.com, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more, or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk Radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. David now having a great conversation about the brain and the amygdala and the fight, flight, or freeze response. Before, we were just kind of talking about in kind of general terms. And before the break, we were talking about kind of like what it feels like. So can you pick up where you left off, Dr. Now?
Yes, we were talking about the amygdala hijack. So we said there's two parts of the brain, grossly speaking. There's the thinking, planning, overseer, and then there's this amygdala responsible for anger and rage. And a couple times you've used the term the amygdala gets hijacked. And I think what that looks like is, for example, stage fright. You have a skillful pianist who sits down to do a recital, and then she forgets how to move her fingers. It's almost like she can't move her fingers. That's one way of being hijacked. Or a panic attack is being hijacked. Or you're in a conversation with somebody you care about deeply, and they're touching some buttons and making you angry, and you go into defensive mode, and you hurt with your words or with your hands, things you don't intend to do, not with your thinking brain, not with the best part of you, not with your heart. That's an example of your amygdala being hijacked. And this stuff matters a lot. This can cost you a job or a relationship, get you kicked out of school.
Yep. And so this is, I'm glad you said that, because this is the reason that we're doing this show is if you begin to look at Dr. Barclay's notion that ADHD is a self-regulation issue, it's an executive function, if you largely of which is self-regulation, and that theory, attention is something that you need to regulate, but emotion is something that you need to regulate. And Dr. Now, as I've worked with and coaching people, sometimes this component is more difficult because when those emotions get hijacked, it's difficult really even to regulate your attention at that point in time. And I got some questions for you because for me, we talked about stage fright and these panic attacks and stuff like that. My understanding of the amygdala is it's hardwired for automatic responses. Like when you feel threatened for your life, it goes into that fight, flight, or freeze. Fight like hell, run like hell, or play dead. And it's a survival mechanism. And when that actually kind of takes place, or when you feel that threat, it just goes into that automatic mode, and it's more difficult at that point in time for that executive functioning brain to step in and override it. That's why when, like, in emergency situations, the first thing they say is don't panic, or you've got to kind of calm down. Going back, you have to feel that and kind of pause. And I think a lot of times in armed services and sports, you practice that behavior of pausing, if you will, so that you can bring the executive function online. And the thing that I'm kind of curious about is certainly if you're about ready to be eaten by a bear, you would go into that response. But it seems to me that sometimes your brain can make a mistake, like it can't distinguish the difference between a life-threatening event of getting eaten by a bear or maybe being yelled at a boss. When your amygdala gets hijacked, it's like on or off. It can't tell the difference. It just goes into that fight or flight or freeze. And so that's one issue. And the other thing that I understand is that the anticipation of a life-threatening event will actually send you into that fight, flight, or freeze. And again, it's the same response in each of those three scenarios that it kind of goes into. And it can be difficult to manage that, which again is a self-regulation problem. So can you comment on those comments that is the amygdala hardwired to do that? And does it go into that if it's threatened for your life, has a hard time discerning the difference and anticipation?
Yeah, each of these two ways of knowing have a wisdom that we want to respect and check in with. Our mutual colleague, Dr. Lynn Kinney, a psychologist who does a lot of work with learning and executive function as it relates to movement, sort of engaging the whole body, especially with children who are learning. She tells a story that for her helped really make this distinction between these two brains. She was hiking somewhere in Arizona, and she noticed off in the distance a coyote. And she said, oh, I'm going to walk really quietly so I don't bother the coyote. And then the very next second she noticed that the hair on her arm was standing on end. And she took a second look and realized that's not a coyote. It's a mountain lion. So what she realized was that her body knew it was a mountain lion. Now, a coyote is not particularly threatening to people, and we should probably leave them alone and let them do their thing. On the other hand, a mountain lion can be threatening to people. Although her head, her thinking head, said, oh, it's a coyote, and they might be endangered, and let's be careful. Although her head said all that stuff, her body said, this is a mountain lion. And when she checked in with her arms and saw the hair standing on end, She took another look and said, oh, my body's right. This is actually a threat. So sometimes your thinking brain is wrong, and then sometimes the amygdala is wrong. When your spouse is haranguing or insulting you, and it feels as though you're being challenged by a bear, the amygdala is wrong. When your boss says, hey, I want to talk to you later, and your head goes, oh, no, I'm going to get fired. She's going to can me.
Yep.
That's your amygdala being wrong. So we can't say always trust your amygdala. We can't say always trust your thinking brain. We want to unite these two or yoke these two together.
Yep.
And interestingly, that word yoke is at the heart of the word yoga. So a lot of practices like Tai Chi, like yoga, like any seated meditation practice, even like a mindfulness practice, it may not involve formal sitting. These are ways of yoking these two parts of the brain, your thinking brain and your gut response brain. Both of them are important, but they got to have some unity. If one takes off without the other, you have the cart before the horse, or you have a horse without a cart. Now, there are a couple of practices that I think we should share with your listeners.
Yep.
One of them is body-based, and one of them is head-based. And
okay.
There's times when I'm not in the mood to do a head-based practice because I'm tired. I've been thinking all day, so I want to go with a body-based practice. And there's times when I'm sitting with a journal and I feel like thinking and reflecting, and a head-based practice is appropriate. However, time to do these practices is right now when you're calm and you don't feel threatened. You really can't implement these practices in the moment unless you've already rehearsed them and you're clear about them and you know the steps. Because once that amygdala is hijacked, you will fight, flight, or freeze. There is no turning that around. It has to run its course.
Yep.
Interestingly, when the amygdala fires like that, there's a chemical released in the body. And in the body, we call it a hormone. We call it adrenaline. That very same chemical in the brain, we call norepinephrine. Now, as you know, Western medicine is always busy splitting the head off from the brain. So this chemical, this one chemical, has two different names, adrenaline, norepinephrine. So what this chemical does is it helps us distinguish essential from non-essential. When you are being chased by a bear, nothing else matters. When you feel that your finances are in threat and you're trying to balance a checkbook and you're freaking out, almost nothing else matters. So adrenaline or norepinephrine helps us draw a fine bead on what matters. In high doses, we get that fight or flight responses. In low dose, it helps us move through the day. In fact, one of the non-stimulant ADHD meds, which is the brand name is Strattera, actually increases the available norepinephrine. So, in fact, one treatment for some types of ADD is, in fact, at the level of norepinephrine. So this is not a bad chemical. It's simply a chemical that we won't want to work with and manage. So body-based practice is this, progressive muscle relaxation. Just like it sounds, in progressive muscle relaxation, we progressively work through the muscles in the body. Some people like to start with their feet, work up to their legs and their hips. Other people prefer to start at the crown of the head with the scalp, the ears, the jaw. And you can do this in a 10-minute practice or a 30-second practice. Once you get good at it, you can do it just sitting at a red light. You can do it with your eyes open. You don't have to be so relaxed that you actually fall out of the chair.
Yep.
I would encourage anybody who's interested in this, just go to YouTube and type in progressive muscle relaxation. You're going to see a bunch of videos. Pick the one that is the link that fits your interest. You know, if it's an hour-long video and you've got that much interest, great. If you've got about 3 minutes of interest, pick that one. Pick one that seems age-appropriate. There are some progressive muscle relaxation practices for children, which involve imagining that you're the Incredible Hulk and you're green and you're humongous and you're all very tense. And then imagine that you're changing back into a regular guy and now you're floppy and soft. That might be appropriate for kids, and there may be one that suits your style. There's some progressive muscle relaxation that makes use of a lot of visual imagery. Some of it really focuses on words like relax and release. The one that I like to do simply starts with the feet and allows you to bring your awareness to your feet and just gently invite relaxation into your feet.
Yep.
Then moving up to your legs. Most people don't carry tension in their calves or their hamstrings. When you get up to your belly, that's when it's probably important to bring some skillful awareness. And then certainly by the time you get to your shoulders, most of us can always drop just another 16th of an inch. Even when you think you're relaxed, check the shoulders. I bet you can drop a 16th of an inch. Your jaws are strong enough to break a pencil in half, strong enough to break through a skin, even break a finger. And we often tense the jaw, so just bring some love and attention to your temporal mandibular joint and then around your ears and scalp. Take as long on that as you want or as little as you want, but practice it when you're calm so that when you need it, when your boss says, hey, I want to talk to you later, right there in that moment, begin to fire off this progressive muscle relaxation practice.
Yep.
So that's the body-based practice.
And the journaling?
Head-based practice.
Or head-based, yep.
And so the head-based practice is to notice the relationship between your thoughts and your emotional response. So if you can, if you have a piece of paper right now, or if you can use a piece of paper in your mind, I want you to draw the letter A, and think of that as the antecedent. The antecedent is the thing that happened before. That is, your boss says, hey, I want to talk with you. Or you get a letter in the mail from a state agency. That's the antecedent.
Uh-huh.
Then draw a big letter C. That's the consequence. That's your emotional response.
Okay.
It could be you see the letter from the state and you think, oh, it's a refund check. And so your emotional consequence is you're happy, you're pleased. Or you think, oh, I'm being called in for some legal issue. So the consequence is I get panicky and scared. So the antecedent is what comes before the C. The consequence is my emotional response. And I want to suggest that between the A and the C, there's a B. That stands for behavior. And I have to ask myself, when my boss said, hey, I want to talk to you, and then I got panicky, it didn't really happen that way. It didn't go from my boss said, I want to talk to you, and I got panicky. Something happened between there. And I may not even be aware of it, but there was behavior. Maybe I drew my shoulders up about an eighth of an inch. Maybe I breathed more shallow. And almost certainly, I created pictures in my head. That's a behavior. Almost certainly, I spoke to myself, maybe silently in my own head. That's a behavior. So a question to ask is, when my boss says, I want to talk to you, and then I got panicky, what's the B? What exactly did I do? How did I breathe? How did I hold my hands? What did I picture in my head? What did I say? And if I want to feel something, what other behavior could I do? Could I drop my shoulders? Could I say, okay, if my boss is going to fire me, here's my backup plan? Or could I say, one possibility is my boss is going to fire me. Another possibility is she's going to promote me or congratulate me. What could I do to get a slightly different emotional consequence? Because it's possible she's going to fire you. It's also possible she's going to give you an award.
Yep.
It's also possible I could drop my shoulders. It's possible I could breathe differently. So one way of rehearsing in advance to avoid being hijacked is to practice this body-based. Just practice relaxing your body. The other way is to notice our thoughts. When we have an unpleasant emotional response, what was the behavior?
Yep.
And what was the thought? And what do we picture? And what do we say to ourselves right before I got that emotional reaction?
Yep.
Now, that takes a lot of practice. You're not going to be – if you're just hearing this stuff for the first time today in this conversation, you're not going to be doing that this afternoon or tomorrow. You begin to practice, begin to laugh at yourself, begin to notice how hard this is, be easy with yourself. But I guarantee anyone listening – if you begin to practice both of these, you will get better at it, and you will reduce the freak out, you'll reduce the anxiety, maybe 1%, maybe 2%.
But over time, it gets better. I want to go to a break real quick. When we come back, I want to kind of talk about this in a context, a little bit kind of coaching, kind of relating to what you're doing, and kind of tie this all back together, why I think this show is real important. If you're listening, again, go check out Dr. David Now at his website, drnowell.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm here with one of my favorite, all-time favorite guests, Dr. David Now, and we're on a great topic. Dr. Now, I've interviewed so many people over the years, and it's been interesting to me how everybody uses different words and they go about things differently. But if you look at the process, there's a lot of homogeneousness of those processes. And I want to take my take on this and share it and then get your thoughts on it, because at the end of the day, what I was listening to with your body-based exercise and your head-based exercise is, to me, they are an attention exercise. And what I mean by that is you sit there purposefully and you begin to be mindful of something, in some type of exercise. Now, in my world, I'll have somebody sit and focus on an object for about 30 seconds, and I'll ask them, you know, what did you notice about the object? But I'll ask them, you know, did you notice an extraneous thought come to mind in that 30 seconds when you're looking at it? And if they got ADD, it's like, well, yeah. And I go, what did you do when you noticed that extraneous thought? Did you bring your focus back to the object? And they'll go, yeah. And I say, well, you notice that that object is just the object. That thought is just a thought. Your attention is like a flashlight. It illuminates the object, then illuminates the thought. But when you notice your flashlight has moved from that object and you take it back, you've actually witnessed your attention. And that exercise for 30 seconds, and I call it attention exercise, is it's a practice, noticing when your thoughts move away from that object and you bring it back. And again, I call this an attention exercise. And a lot of times when I'm done, I'm saying, well, that's also basically meditation, only the object is really your breath. And it's not this, don't think of it as this spiritual thing. It's literally, it's an exercise, just like in athletics. If you've got a basketball player, you go and you shoot free throws. You practice that, you rehearse it, was the language that you did, over and over and over, so that in game time, you don't think about it. You just kind of automatically do that. And on my side, I do a lot of work with people and saying, hey, listen, we need to get into that practice exercising of witnessing our attention for that executive functioning brain to kind of override that automatic, so that we do that enough on a regular basis, we become mindful. And then when we're in the game and the boss is kind of coming at you, the key to everything, I think for you and for me, and Sesame Street talks about this, Melissa Orloff talks about this, is that pause, that stopping for a notice and noticing what's going on, so that you're in choice, so that that amygdala doesn't hijack it and just take off for the races. You actually kind of pause and kind of notice what's going on, because when you get that pause, you're in choice. And what I was hearing from your exercises is you begin to pause and notice that behavior that's in that middle, understand what's going on and witness it, so now that you can do something about it. And for me, to manage your emotions, either one, don't put yourself in the situation where you would get hijacked. That would be the easiest. But when you're in it, there's only one way out of it. And there's this mindfulness thing to do if you're going to override it. Now, I'm just a coach, and I've just interviewed a whole bunch of people, and I'm not necessarily expert. You are. But I'd like to get your thoughts, because to me, again, it's a ubiquitous process across the board. Everybody has their own version of an attention exercise to become mindful, so that you can pause when you're in the game and notice what's going on and change your behavior. So with that said, can you share your thoughts on what I just described?
Yeah. Well, right when we came back from the break, you said something. You said that this body-based practice and this head-based practice that we reviewed are attentional exercises. And I knew what you meant, Jeff, because you and I have had conversations about this.
Yep.
I know how you think about attention.
Yep.
If somebody listening to you right now doesn't know what you mean by that, is there something out there that you've written that you can direct them to? Because, you know, you and I have talked about the attention scope, or you remember that whole conversation.
Yeah. So
I knew exactly what. Go ahead.
So let me. I have some attention exercises that I do. One of them I give to when I'm working with somebody new with ADHD, and I talk about, you know, you have the automatic brain, the amygdala side, and you have the executive function. It's very effortful. The executive function brain's got to override that automatic. And what I want to do is I want to put them in an, give them an attention exercise to put them in an experience so they can witness what I talk about. And one of my exercises is to say, listen, I want you to go and prepare and eat a meal, but I want you to do it with your less dominant hand. And so think about this for a second. I'm right-handed. My automatic response is to do everything with my right hand. But in this tension exercise is now I got to be mindful because I got to stop. I got to walk around and think left hand, left hand, left hand, left hand, which, by the way, really slows me down. It chews up my working memory, so I begin to fit steps because I'm holding it so hard in my memory. Or I forget it and I slip back and start using my other hand. And a lot of people, when I go in that, they begin to understand that's an attention exercise because you have to notice the attention kind of going back and forth, and you have to override it. And when I do that with those with ADHD, you notice how effortful it is for you to use your less dominant hand in that exercise. That's what ADD's like, is we've got to be mindful of that in these types of situations because it's hard. We have that automatic response go in, so often we have to kind of override it. And so with that, Dr. Now, it's an attention exercise I give for people to witness their attention and to understand the concept. And then we kind of come back to these mindful things. It's like shooting free throws in your head over and over and over and over, so you become conscious of it. So does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I love just making it that specific, which is to do a body relaxation practice is an attentional exercise because you're bringing your attentional resources to your body. If you're doing a cognitive behavioral workbook exercise, like looking at your thoughts and how they relate to feelings, that's bringing your attention to your own thoughts. The reason that Candy Crush is worth $2 billion is because we bring our attentional resources to it. We live in an attentional industrial complex. Our attention actually has monetary value. And to live well with adult ADD, there's no two ways around it. It takes high awareness living. I think mindfulness is really important for everybody. But if you do struggle with features of ADHD, mindfulness is almost mandatory, which means bringing your awareness to your breath, bringing your awareness to your body. And it's a gentle awareness. You can have fun with it. You said earlier that I sort of avoid technical language and talk about this in practical terms. Alan Brown, who has a program called ADD Crusher, is even more practical, even less sort of jargony technical language, and he has this concept right in the moment when you're about to make a choice between this or that. He asks you, is this important or is this bull crap? I think I've got it right. I may be misquoting it. But I've actually used this because I'm online, I'm doing some research, I'm paying bills, and then I see a headline about Khloe Kardashian is filing divorce again, and I click on it, and then in that moment I have to ask myself, is this important or is this bull crap? And I have to ask myself this over and over. And that is an attentional exercise, just to simply be aware of where am I being pulled off. When I say course, I mean my goals, my values, what I think is important. So attention, the way you're describing it, is what I'm choosing to occupy myself with right now, thinking of my body, thinking of Khloe Kardashian, thinking of my breathing, doing my finances. In this moment, what am I bringing those really valuable attentional resources to?
It's just probably gonna have to do a sequel to this, but you and I corresponded back and forth, and there's some things that your brain is kind of hardwired for, and you talked about your brain responds to red and sweet. Now, in a very high awareness society, if you're conscious of the fact that your brain is drawn to that, and by the way, marketers play on this all the time, you become aware of that, you become high aware and say, oh, they're showing me red and sweet because I'm attracted to it. And you begin to notice that, and that gives you the chance to override it. But I like what you said about high awareness. These attention exercises is to bring high awareness to it. Now, one thing that I want to say in this thing that I'm really kind of exploring right now is I like this notion of attention exercises because I think it's really helpful. We did a show back in October. We asked a lot of experts, And they all agreed that mindfulness needs to be a big part of ADHD. But everybody also agreed it's more difficult for those with ADHD to do these types of exercises because of this distractibility. And as an aside, it's been interesting because I do a lot of talking about ADHD and exercise. And when I talk about exercise and I coach it, I talk to everybody when it comes to real estate, it's location, location, location. When it comes to exercise, it's social, social, social. Did I say social? In other words, you focus on the social aspects, and exercise is typically secondary to some other type of stimulating activity. And for me, this mindfulness thing is hard for those. It's almost like you need to go to the Zumba class, go to the Y and sit for that mindfulness class. It's a social type thing. It will make it easier for those with ADHD to practice it. And we haven't really kind of cracked that code yet. And by the way, the purpose of this show really is to bring awareness and mindfulness to your brain's fight, flight, or freeze response to begin to practice these types of things for you to be manage it. Because if you're not conscious of the need to be of high awareness and you're not doing this, you're going to be stuck in the same loop going around in circles. And I can imagine, Dr. Nell, when you're working with people on these exercises, if they're just going through the motions and they don't understand their purpose, some of it will sink in. But if you get the purpose of why – and you realize I got to practice this and rehearse it so at game time it's an automatic response, I think you're in a better position to actually do something about it and manage it on a consistent basis. So does that make sense to you?
Yeah. You know, when I do these practices in my office with clients, what I want is for them to have an immediate response of reduced anxiety so the practice sells itself. The reason to do this is it will improve your functioning. It will decrease your suffering. About 30% of adults with ADHD also meet criteria for a specific anxiety disorder. And even more than that, will have some clinically significant anxiety. It doesn't quite rise to the level of PTSD or panic or agoraphobia. It's not a specific anxiety disorder, but it's there. It's kind of co-occurring, hanging around with the ADD. And I've actually met folks who tell me that once they start a stimulant medication for ADD, they actually feel less anxious because they're more confident that they're knocking out their important tasks. So sometimes the anxiety is because I'm chasing my own tail, I'm not getting things done. So this whole conversation about fight, flight, freeze, anxiety, it's relevant for most adults who live with ADD can probably resonate with some of this. And it just takes some awareness, bringing your awareness to how exactly do I make myself anxious with the way I breathe, hold my body, my thoughts. And practicing when you're calm, going to YouTube, reading something that one of us has written, practicing when you're calm, getting good at it, guarantee you it will improve your quality of life in the moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Dr. Allen, looking at the time, we need to kind of wrap these up. Any final thoughts before we close the show?
Oh, my gosh. Like you said, we need to do a part two. There's so much more to say. I guess really what – at this point – you know, I wish that this was a live conversation and we could say, what are your questions? Because I'd love to know what somebody – I mean, you and I have been going back and forth. I'd love to hear other people's questions. Is there a way they can get those questions to us?
Well, I tell you what, we will work on doing a sequel. We'll try to use social media and some stuff to get that together and make that happen. So,
all right.
Everybody, you need to learn more about Dr. David Now by going to drnow, NOWELL.com. With that, Dr. Now, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Everybody, we hope you have enjoyed this show. There's a lot of information. I would encourage you to go back and listen to it a time or two. I've learned over the years that this type of topic is you get it and you listen to it a second time and you'll actually get more. So we hope you enjoyed it. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.